Welcome to the Underwater Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the world of underwater portrait photography, cinematography, and everything in between. With me, your host, Brett Stanley. Welcome back to the Underwater Podcast, and this week we're slipping on the mermaid tail and chatting with Lyndon Walbird. Lyndon is a professional mermaid who's pioneered the world of mermaiding, from creating her own tail with a special effects artist to now having her own line of body glove tails for kids, available worldwide. She talks about how she moved from behind the camera as a wildlife filmmaker to being in front of it and presenting her own educational program to help kids understand the ocean better. We discuss her work as an underwater stunt person and how she got to work with Wesley from The Princess Bride. Okay, let's dive in. Lyndon, welcome to the Underwater Podcast.
Brett, thank you so much for having me on today.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you on because you're such a kind of, dare I say, legend in the whole mermaid world, having kind of been one of the originators of the kind of the professional mermaid sort of situation, right?
I guess by accident, yes. I never intended to pioneer a subculture or an industry. I was just doing something that I loved and it just came in the form of a mermaid.
Oh, right. And so how did that form come about? How did you become Mermaid Lyndon?
Ooh, how did I become Mermaid Lyndon? It was an evolution. It was an evolution. I was obsessed with the underwater world and all things nature, really, from the time I was a little sea squirt. Nice. As a child, I grew up, my parents were always very supportive. If my sister or myself took an interest in anything at all, they'd say, oh, okay, we'll get you a book about ladybugs if you like ladybugs or anything like that. And I always was just very enchanted by the underwater world and watching, of course, you know, I grew up in Amish country, Pennsylvania. I was not Amish. We were not Amish, but we were in that dwelling. We didn't have cable for much of my youth. And so we had three channels like you do in the US if you didn't have cable back in the 80s. And one of them was thankfully PBS. And I loved PBS. I loved all of the documentaries, wildlife documentaries, specifically underwater wildlife documentaries that they would have on the airwaves. And I would watch and just dream that I was part of that underwater world. And of course, the very trite, I loved Jacques Cousteau, but it's true, I did. And Marty Stauffer's Wild America. So I would just read books about fish and aquatic wildlife and just by happenstance memorize species and find favorite animals and, you know, as I now call them, celebrities. You know, I get more excited seeing a species I've never seen before than a celebrity on land. Yeah. You know, I work with a lot of celebrities. I have in the past. I probably will in the future. But I get much more excited about animals and habitats. I'm a science geek.
That's awesome. And so as a kid, you're kind of into the underwater world. Were you kind of thinking of a career in that?
I did. From a young age, I wanted to be a wildlife cinematographer and filmmaker. So that was my initial pursuit. So my evolution of becoming Mermaid Lyndon started forming, unbeknownst to me, when I decided to go to film school. I went to Emerson College in Boston. And I studied film and environmental science. I took every science course they offered, and I became so excited at the idea of knowing at the end of my senior year, my final semester would be spent, if I was accepted into the program, the Los Angeles internship program that Emerson offered. So I knew I was coming out here. I was accepted. And so I moved from, you know, the bitter cold Northeast, which was so amazing, to come to LA, saved up my little sand dollars. I worked as a residence director. After I graduated through the program myself, I was hired as the residence director. And I did that for a time, miserably, unfortunately, being in an office. And I became certified as soon as I had the money saved up to do scuba diving certification. So I became a paddy open water diver and very rapidly kept doing training and eventually became a master scuba diver. And I really just loved it so much. And I'm a very energetic person. And so people started in the scuba world seeing me, and lo and behold, I was offered a job as a Patty model. So Patty hired me, and for some time, I eventually quit my job as a residence director to pursue this underwater dream of underwater wildlife documentary filmmaking, being an underwater model, and being paid to travel around the world with Patty. Wow. My skills were obviously very honed in. We had to demonstrate perfect skills for manuals and training materials for Patty scuba divers, which I was in a bunch of them. It still appear in a couple of those little manuals.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And I became aware of the sport of free diving.
Right.
And I didn't know it existed.
Oh.
And it blew my mind. You know, from Amish country, Pennsylvania to Boston, you don't really hear about free diving. It wasn't very prevalent. And when I found out about the sport of free diving, and then I was asked to help film an underwater documentary about free diving in the Cayman Islands, and that's really when the light bulbs went off. I was on scuba filming these gorgeous, elegant, graceful, fit, just elite athletes diving and plummeting into the depths with monofins. There it was. Oh my gosh, monofins. So cool. I thought it was the neatest thing I'd ever seen. And having grown up as well, I was a competitive swimmer growing up. I forgot to mention that. I always loved the water. So I swam and went to the beach and loved it. But then seeing these free divers, I was like, holy sea cow. These people are it's just the most beautiful motion I've ever witnessed underwater. And I thought, wow, they look like mer people. And so I asked Mandy Ray Cruikshank, who is a world champion freediver from Canada. She is a founding member of Performance Freediving International. And she was setting world records at this experience that I was filming for this documentary. And I asked her one day, I was like, Mandy, what shoe size are you? And she told me she was an 8 in U.S. women's. And I was so excited because that's my size. And I said, can I please try your monofin? And she let me try it. And that was it. I just instantly knew I have to find a way to make a mermaid tale, because what better way to teach children about the ocean, which was what I wanted to do through documentary filmmaking, than as a mermaid who's half ocean creature and half human and can speak on behalf of those ocean animals who have no voice to the top half of the body, which is a human. So I just had, it's like Las Vegas lit up over my head, you know, bing. And I had no idea how it was going to happen. No idea how I would materialize this monofin into a tail. And I had to save up to buy one. They're very expensive. They're very delicate.
Was there such a thing at that point? Or like, was it something you could buy off the shelf? Or did you have to kind of get it made?
There were not really any kind of mass producing tail makers in the world at that time, to my knowledge. There were a couple of bespoke tail makers who would make, you know, silicone, like for prosthetics, for films. It was like a super expensive thing. Like I knew of Tom the Tail Man. I knew of various people who had worked on films or commercials where a mermaid tail was needed. And they would have either made a silicone, or not even silicone at that time. They were using like, I don't even know, different rubbers and materials, sometimes fabrics. But I did not know how I was going. At first I thought, ooh, I'll just use like neoprene or fabric and I'll paint it with like puff paints or add sea. I didn't know. And there was no tutorial for anything like this. There was nothing. I scoured the internet. I scoured YouTube. There was nothing, nothing. And I was like, okay, how am I going to do this? And like with everything in my life, if I know what my, as I call it, my Z, my final destination, the end of the alphabet, I know what I want. I know what my goal is. Suddenly, the universe, whatever, just lines it all up for me. And this was no exception. A friend of mine had an extra monofin and was like, hey, I don't use this old monofin anymore. Do you want it? So I got a monofin. I had a perfect monofin. And it is the fin that ultimately went into my first tail. Then a special effects artist magically found his way into my existence via a college friend who had met this guy who said, oh, I want to make an underwater music video. And my college friend was like, oh my gosh, my friend Lyndon is doing underwater cinematography and work. Like she's filming underwater. She's a diver. She can help you with this. And it so happened when I met this gentleman, Alan Holt, who wanted to make this music video and was going to just pepper me with questions. I said, so what do you do? Are you a filmmaker? He's like, no, actually, I'm a special effects artist. Oh, I was like, what? Yeah. You are? That's awesome, because I need you to help me. So there it all is. It's like, boom, there was the Monofin. Boom, here's a special effects artist who actually wanted to do this project with me and had the desire to really explore it. Because mermaid tails they're not easy to make, as it turns out.
No. So what was the process of getting that made? Because I assume you had this monofin that you wanted to build it around.
Yeah. So I had quit my job, obviously, at this point at Emerson Los Angeles as a residence director. And I temporarily moved into a room above the garage at my parents' house so that I could start this pursuit of underwater filmmaking through the vessel of a mermaid, not knowing how I was going to do it. And so out in the yard at my parents' place, Alan would come over and we started, you know, and I'm, you know, gradually getting materials and we're strategizing. I did all this research because, again, there was no tutorial out there or nobody had really put anything into public, I don't know, discovery of how to make a mermaid tail. And Alan had experience with making other underwater special effects projects, but never a tail. And I had a high demand. You know, right. I wanted a realistic looking, resilient, form-fitted, solid piece of equipment that was beautiful, functional, resilient. But also, I didn't want my knees to be visible, my ankles and my heels to be visible, my legs to be obvious. And so I was asking, it was a tall order, and Alan was up for it. So I was like, oh, this is great. So we started by basically I researched what I wanted it to look like. I had to know what I wanted the outcome to be. Again, I needed my Z to have the other letters from A line up to get me to that Z. And so I did a ton of research on fish and sharks and wildlife. And I also didn't want my tail to look like how, I guess, at that point in time, traditionally people think of a mermaid tail, which is sort of the fluke is shaped like a whale or a dolphin or, you know, a cetacean. I wanted my little design turned out to be basically a circle, a half circle, a crescent. And I chose that because I actually used what a term that was coined after I did this, biomimicry. I imitated nature. I wanted not just a unique visual tail that only if you even saw the silhouette of it, you would say, oh, that's Mermaid Linden, because there's no other mermaid tail like it. Yeah. But also one that would be really powerful. I like going fast in the water. Yeah. I like using a modicum of effort and propelling. And this tail does that. And it was a process, Brett. It took 7 months. It took, I don't even know how many actual man hours and woman hours, because Alan was coming over. He was working on Terminator Salvation at the time, doing special effects on that movie.
Yeah.
And I was working on sculpting scales during the day. We started with a fiberglass mold of my body, and it was very complicated. We made fake legs, Linden legs, and then piled clay over top of it, hand sculpted the scales, which again, I looked at different fish and chose the type of patterning I wanted. I didn't want it to be perfect. So it's not, if you look closely at my silicone tails, you'll see that it's imperfect, which is like nature, you know? I wanted something very streamlined, hydrodynamic, no frills. So my tail is very minimalistic. It's very sleek. You cannot see my knees. You cannot see my heels, but it is so on land, it's cumbersome. But I'll tell you, I love it. And we have since made two other tails from that original mold. That fiberglass mold has now made three mermaid tails. Tail 1.0, the original. Tail 2.0, which actually got heavier because we replaced some internal neoprene that lined tail 1.0 with solid silicone. So it was more neutrally buoyant in the ocean, for example. I made a mistake and it was a little too buoyant in salt water, the first iteration. So I had to strap lead between my legs. Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty gnarly. So, you know, we learn. Engineering is part of the process of creating these tails, at least in the version I wanted to create. So Alan was amazing. I learned so much. He let me have hands-on participation in the entire process. And so by nature of building this tail, I became like an apprentice I feel, in special effects.
Yeah, totally. And you would have learned a lot of the processes in there.
Yeah, it was great. So, you know, the final version of it, I love my design. And it's still the design I use today. It's my signature. And I love it.
That's amazing to have, you know, this light bulb moment, like you say, and then to come to something that is, you're having a very intimate relationship with this tale. Like it's your craft. Like this is your main tool for your career, right?
Yeah. I mean, I call it my baby for a reason. Yeah. It really was my firstborn.
Exactly.
And subsequently second and third, because now I have two silicone swimming tails and then one land tail that we made out of a lightweight foam latex material that is a replica. So
I was going to ask if you did have one that was less functional for land, because, you know, you obviously don't need a monofin and all that sort of stuff in there because you just need to look the part.
Yep.
Yeah. We did.
And the land tail, what initiated that was actually I had a residency at the LA County Fair. And it was so amazing for several years. I had my own little stage and it was the Mermaid Linden underwater education stage. And kids could come up and, you know, they'd watch Mermaid Minutes, which is a little educational documentary style thing I make for kids. And then they'd watch that. And then I'd come out on my shell throne. I'd be rolled out and in my lightweight replica tail, which had just a little polycarbonate blade with actual monofin foot pockets inside, just so I could flip the tail easily. And the blade still had a firmness, but it was super lightweight. Oh my gosh, completely different from being in a 50-pound silicone tail, of course, on land, which is just very cumbersome and impossibly uncomfortable. And this tail, I take such good care of my gear, namely my tails. So this tail has lasted me. In fact, the special effects artists who helped with it, who did the foam latex, like they're different effects artists who are specializing in certain areas of things. And this is like the foam latex guy. He was amazing. And he made this thing for me now. How many years ago? I don't even know how many years ago. And recently I had a chat with him and he's like, "You still have that tail? That tail still exists?" Yeah, right. I'm like, He's like, "Oh, dude, usually that material degrades and like it lasts for like a couple scenes of a movie and it's done." I was like, no, I'm taking care of it. It was expensive and, you know, it's beautiful. And so I have all these, like underneath my bed, I have all these, it looks like dead bodies and body bags, but it's actually mermaid tails in wedding dress bags to keep them dust-free and bug-free and dry happy and in the dark, you know? It's like vitamins stored in a cool, dry place for best results.
So what happened? So you built this tail and you had this project that you were wanting to do. What happened with that project?
Oh, so I ultimately started taking the tail because I'm always doing a lot of things at one time. I was modeling for Patty. I became a freediving a judge for basically ADA, one of the governing bodies of freediving. And so I started traveling around the world as an ADA freediving judge. And I was officiating, you know, judging world records, national records at competitions and such. So not only was I continuing my training in freediving, which had originated with Performance Freediving International with Mandy Ray Cruikshank, Kirk Kroc, and Martin Stepanek at the time, who was part of PFI. And then we branched off and created freediving instructors and trainers, which is now known as FII. So little known fact, I actually helped Martin with the inception of his freediving agency that he now has, FII. I did a lot of crazy things in the interim of doing this in freediving as well. So doing modeling for scuba, starting freediving agencies, training as to become a judge, and then officiating as a judge at competitions. And I would take my tail everywhere because it was an incredible opportunity to not only get gorgeous footage and photographs while I was judging, you know, off-duty judge, I would be mermaiding. And the freedivers loved it. And there are always underwater photographers at these events, you know, filming and photographing the competitors. So, of course, they were thrilled on off days to play with a mermaid in the coral reef, right? So we had a blast. So I started acquiring beautiful content and getting more and more experience, not just freediving, but freediving without a mask on, wearing a 50-pound silicone appendage, getting used to buoyancy, understanding angles, knowing where is the shooter and how can I best accommodate between this sea creature or this coral reef and myself, and having come from being behind the camera prior to being suddenly a model, which was never really my intention. And I don't really, interestingly, love doing modeling. Like, I always feel pretty uncomfortable in front of camera, but oh, the images and the footage, I would see it afterward and be like, oh my gosh, this is so great for teaching kids.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
You know, like, here's this mermaid swimming with the ocean creature that they're learning about that she's discussing. So it brings that, it blurs that line again between the human world and the aquatic world and makes it a spectacle. It makes it unforgettable and it makes it really interesting for children.
That's a really interesting way of bringing it in. Like this fantasy sort of creature kind of bringing the real world to these kids. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun. I love it.
So how were you going to use this footage? Like what was your plan to use this footage of you underwater interacting with wildlife and the coral and all that sort of stuff? How were you going to sort of bring that all together and put it into a package that could be then shown?
I dreamed up, I think of most of my really good ideas in two places. One, in my dreams, actually, I'll have a dream about something. And I'm like, oh, I'll wake up and immediately usually I do a voice memo to myself. Because you know how dreams kind of disappear?
Yeah, totally.
They just melt out of your memory and, oh, I can't quite remember what happened. So I immediately, I've learned to have this habit of my phone is right there by my bed. I do a voice memo. So I really feel the feelings and remember the clarity and the detail of a dream. So that's where I first come up with ideas that I then turn into my reality. Then also when I'm shampooing my hair, I have this joke that I'm massaging my brain coral and it just like bursts with really fun ideas. And so I was actually this particular idea, which was for the Mermaid Minute, which is the thing I'm most proud of everything I've ever created in my mermaiding career. The Mermaid Minute is, it's a culmination of all of my passions and a delivery of my dream, which is ocean edutainment to children and anyone, really, anyone who wants to watch. So the Mermaid Minute burst into my brain coral like a bubble of joy in the shower as I was massaging my hair. And there it was. So the idea was, okay, 1 minute with every single little bit of information or facts I can possibly pack into a minute of video content for children about a specific ocean creature or phenomenon or habitat or something ocean related. It could be conservation minded. It could be just one little creature. Like I have an episode on barnacles, you know,
awesome.
Anything. Yeah. It seems benign. Like, oh, how could you go on and on about a barnacle? Well, it's actually really interesting if you look at them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just love that. And as a child, I feel like we look at those little things. You know, when we were children, we stopped, at least I did. I would stop and I could look at a square foot of grass and just look at it and see, oh my gosh, look, there's a little bug down there.
Right.
Oh, wow, this flower is starting to bloom. Children are fascinated by details. And so I wanted to just kind of zoom in, magnify on one subject at a time and only for a minute. And to my shock, it was incredible how much I could pack into 1 minute of video. And so the Mermaid Minute, I would film them. I was hosting them. I was editing them. I composed the music for them.
Oh, nice.
I, you know, obviously produced and directed it. I did everything. I learned nonlinear editing for the first time because I'd come from a world of deck-to-deck editing, like physical splicing of film and also cutting video like a SVHS and Betamax and all that. And then going into the world of nonlinear editing specifically for this project. So I started, thank goodness, a neighbor of mine is a professional editor and was like, hey, you know, I can help you. And he gave me some hints and sat with me for a couple of hours. And wow, I was so off to the races. And I started a YouTube channel, which also shockingly, and I think when did I start my YouTube channel? I think it was 2009. I finally started a YouTube channel and a video that I put up, just a promotional video for my company, Mermaids in Motion, went viral. And I didn't even realize it. because I hadn't posted anything else on the channel. And I went back one day and it had over a million views. Back in this is in the single digit 2000s. I was like, holy sea cow. Like, someone told me you could monetize this. I didn't know you could do this. I was like, you can? And so I monetized my YouTube channel and started creating Mermaid Minutes, and it was sustainable. It was incredible. People were watching it. I was so honored that people wanted to watch these little videos I was creating, you know, in a room above the garage at my parents' house.
Yeah.
You know, with basically like zero sand dollars because I'd spent them all making a tail. And, you know, I made my website for my business. And that's when word started getting around about me as a mermaid performer in Hollywood and in Los Angeles. And there weren't other mermaid performers at the time. And so I was kind of the first, to my knowledge, in LA doing live performance-based work, going to schools, doing educational talks for kids, creating educational content, edutainment, as I call it, for the little sea squirts. And so, like, you know, like the big parties and events that started happening, you know, like celebrities and people who's who of Hollywood started hiring me, and it rapid fire, you know, the word of mouth goes quickly. And when there's something new and hot, of course, then everybody wants it at their event. So it really was incredible. That was like the golden era for me of live performance that was non-education related. But those performances were subsidizing my passion work, which was creating the Mermaid Minute.
And what sort of performances were they? Were they in swimming pools at parties, or were they dry in the corner of an event, or what sort of stuff?
Oh, they were namely aquatic. Yeah, this was, you know, really just anything from, which I love, children's birthday parties. Oh my gosh, so much fun. You know, I just, little kids who are excited about anything are the sweetest. And their enthusiasm is contagious. Their eyes light up. They are smiles for miles. And to be the mythical creature that shows up in their backyard pool and surprises them and all their friends and puts little mermaid fins on them and teaches them how to swim like mermaids and play games and just have true magic in their life, especially young children who believe in mermaids. Right. Oh, there's nothing sweeter. There's just nothing sweeter in the world. And I would infuse education into these experiences. So, of course, the parents are thinking, oh, it's like a mermaid princess coming into the party. And then I'd show up and I'd be like, what's your favorite ocean animal?
Yeah. Have you heard of barnacles?
Yeah. Have you heard about barnacles? Have you heard about narwhals? And, you know, and these little kids, I call them my little sea fans, you know, these little sea fans, they're sea sponges, and they love hearing about ocean creatures. And, one kid would say, I love dolphins. I'd be like, I speak dolphin. And I'd be like, yeah. You know, I'd do a dolphin call, and the kids just, their jaws drop. And then they'd be like, are you real though? And then I'd swim underwater for like a minute or two, and they come up still smiling and not out of breath, and they're like, oh, she's real. There's, it's, you know, one could call it deception of the highest caliber, but also one could say that it's a life-changing moment where you have, you know, you have a captive audience, and then you can say, but do you love our oceans? Do you know that you impact our oceans and that animal that you love, the dolphins, the sea turtles, the seahorses, the sea stars, you affect them every day by what you do here on land. And they're like, I do. And then I get to give a conservation message during a birthday party.
There's an interesting thing with sort of the ocean stuff and then the people stuff. I used to volunteer at the Aquarium of the Pacific here.
Oh,
and
yay.
Used to be in the tank doing the presentations and stuff. And it was really interesting because we would have these school groups come through and you'd watch these kids from above. And they'd be kind of interested, some of them really not interested at all. And it wasn't until we sort of, as divers, sort of came in and dropped down into the tank that they kind of looked and went, oh, my God, there's a person in there. Wow, that's incredible. Oh, my, wow, people can be in the water? That's incredible. And then suddenly telling them about the place that we were from inside the tank blew their little minds because they were like, oh, I want to be in there. I want to be a person who's under the water. You know, like it's that kind of seeing themselves under the water suddenly makes this a place that they want to care about.
Yeah, it opens a scope, doesn't it? It opens a scope of possibility for them, not just that they want to be there, that they could potentially work there. They could have a career like you do. They could do something, whether it's, of course, there's always the, I want to be a marine biologist. That's the first one that kids always think of usually, you know, and it's so cute. Yeah. But that's a seed planted. That's a possibility for them.
That's why I think what you've done is genius. You've taken a sea animal and a human and merged them together, you know, to sort of span that barrier between the two things to make it undeniable. It's brilliant.
Oh, thank you. It's just what I wanted to do and it came to be. And I'm just so glad the world is receiving it, you know, because if no one enjoyed it or liked it, then I guess I wouldn't still be doing it.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point too, because at the moment, and I don't know when this kind of started, but there is a massive mermaid kind of industry at the moment.
Oh, it's a movement. It's a whole culture now.
Totally.
Yeah.
How does that feel to you to sort of have done something so early on and then to now see how big a groundswell this is in terms of the mermaid movement?
So fascinating to have been almost like a fly on the wall. Even though I was and have been actively mermaiding for, you know, the better part of 20 years now, frighteningly, it's like it still shocks me and delights me and tickles me when I walk into a store, for example, like a shop that has gifts and there are mermaid things everywhere. You know, this just was not how it used to be. And, you know, just this explosion of mer culture and the subculture of it. And there's now just, there's so many categories of it as it's become more popular. So yeah, there was sort of this explosion of tale makers and content creators and people kind of hobbyists who bought tales and many people who are doing it professionally or making money from performances or however they're doing it. And, you know, I kind of joke around that I was an artist who then started to have to learn business. And now I feel like the table has flipped and the scale has just gone poof. And I'm now a business person who is also an artist. But out of necessity, yes, watching all of this happening and having to really create a business model for which there was not one, to my knowledge, when I started. Create documents and waivers and negotiate payments. And I mean, it just the business behind it is really, it's a lot of work. And I had to gradually learn it. So yes, watching this industry kind of blossoming before my very eyes, especially over the past really 5 to 7 years, I'd say it's really exploding. Whereby, and then just, and I don't know what specifically made that happen. Was it just a timing? Was it just a coincidence? Was it that mermaids started being in feature films more, like Pirates of the Caribbean had mermaids in some of their iterations or versions of their film? Was it that, I don't know. I mean, I got news coverage and things that I never could have anticipated. Things just started, again, falling in my lap. I never pursue PR and it just would come to me. And people just were fascinated by the story, which was cool.
Yeah.
But wow, I just never could have anticipated how it grew. And then, you know, doing these performances and these parties and these events and creating the YouTube channel and then suddenly getting the news coverage and then having things come out of the woodwork, you know, opportunities like to design my own monofins. Like, how did this happen? I don't even really know. You know, these things all evolved. And again, having those roots in the scuba industry from when I was modeling with Patty, and then I went to the scuba convention, the world's largest scuba convention, the DEMA show, and I met so many different people from manufacturers to underwater image makers and filmmakers and researchers and scientists. And so the network of people that I met, I guess, in the right a niche, for lack of a better term, everyone knew me as the mermaid. And it just, opportunities just came flying at me.
Yeah. I mean, because you've started up a partnership with Body Glove to design children's, like mermaid accessories, right?
Yeah. So it started with children's monofins and little float suits and hoodie towels that looked like mermaids with little tails. And I designed tail skins that are now patented. I'm an inventor. Yeah. I didn't expect any of this stuff. And then I dreamed up the world's first foldable monofin, which just came out on the market for children right now. Just came out last year in 2020. And then, now, and we have adult monofins now too. So top selling monofins on Amazon, people putting them into their tail company manufacturing processes and designing tail skins to go around the monofins for both kids and adults. Like I never knew I'd get into all of this. Never dreamed it would happen.
I mean, how would you think that this was going to happen? Like it's such a, I feel like it's such a perfect storm of good things happening that has kind of made this whole groundswell, you know, and every year I see it, 'cause I kind of am in that sort of community as well, because I photograph a lot of these mermaids, and every year I just see more and more stuff coming out and more people involved and people finding new ways to change that industry a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. And you know, it's so fun too, because I think, you know, kind of the originals, I always think of Hannah Fraser, of course, who we were kind of on other sides of the planet from each other, opposite sides. She was in Australia and I was here. And we started at pretty much around the same time doing what we were doing unbeknownst to each other. And then when our paths finally crossed, I was like, oh, finally someone else who understands all this weird stuff that no one else does. You know, how does it feel to have your legs bound together, holding your breath without a mask on 40 feet below the surface surrounded by sharks? Oh, you know how that feels. And have to look good and smile. Like, this was the first person that I had met who really, like, nobody else understood.
Yeah.
Nobody else understood. And then there was Medusa Rena Marina, the fire-eating mermaid, is in Florida. And she was doing just beautiful aquatic dance and just performance work. And so I feel like we were kind of like the first three who were doing something that was mermaid-related full-time. It was our passion and our various ways of expressing that type of performance, or that type of that half-fish, half-human form.
That's incredible. And finding each other, like, how did you find each other? Was it through the internet or through people?
You know, Hannah and I initially connected. I don't know if she remembers this. This is how long ago it was, folks. MySpace. Yeah.
Dating yourself.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yep. We are. Hannah and I are both in the over 40 club. So, you know, and started in our 20s. So there it is.
Yeah. That's incredible, though. I mean, MySpace is such a, I mean, it's so long ago for a lot of us, you know, like it feels like that it was back in, you know, it feels like ancient history a little bit in terms of the internet. And so did you guys have your own pages on there? Did you have profiles? And is that how you were marketing yourselves as well, through MySpace?
You know, I had not really marketed myself through MySpace. I had my own website at that point. I think it was someone else forwarded me her page and was like, oh my God, look, there's another mermaid. I was like, oh my gosh, there's a mermaid in Australia. How cool. And, you know, so the first time we actually met, this was so funny. I was in a tea house in Hollywood and I was getting loose leaf tea for a gift for, I think, my mother for Mother's Day, and irrelevant. But anyway, I heard people, I noticed people walked into the tea bar from the entrance and they're chattering. And at this point I knew of Hannah. We had never actually communicated, but I knew of her and that she was in Australia. And I suddenly hear this voice behind me, this, you know, Australian accent saying, oh, so what do you say? Like, hi, a mermaid, or like whatever. I'm doing a terrible accent. I'm so sorry, Hannah. I'm not doing you justice. And I turn my head. I'm like, excuse me. Did you just say something about hire a mermaid? And then I looked at her, and you know, Hannah, you've worked with her. Her eyes are just like piercing, gorgeous light. And there was this blonde hair and these eyes. And I was like, oh, are you Hannah Mermaid? I'm Mermaid Lyndon. Are you in town tonight? I'm doing a performance downtown. Do you want to come? And like, I was so excited because I'd not met any other live professional performing freediving mermaids ever. Yeah. At this juncture. And she was like, oh my God, hi. And we start chatting. And at that point, you know, I'd already gone through the process and had been performing and had my silicone tail. She's like, oh, you've got a silicone tail. I was like, I do. Anyway, it was just like this instant kind of bonding of someone who understands and can relate, that many other people, of course, at this time would look at me like I was an alien.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I said I was a mermaid, and she completely understood. So we since then, of course, have collaborated. We've performed together. We have had some really fun experiences. She is such an incredibly talented woman and just beautiful and incredible in the water, as you know, having worked with her. Yeah.
Yeah. just a lovely person. Like she's just so open and relaxed about everything. It's such a nice thing.
Yep. Yeah. She is the definition of a free spirit.
Yes. Yep. And so my experience with Hannah, I know, you know, she's done a lot of sort of TV work and movie work as a mermaid. Mm-hmm. And have you done the same sort of thing? Have you been in that side of Hollywood here?
I have. Yeah. I have been in a bunch of music videos. I have done underwater stunt doubling. I have been, you know, featured in music videos as myself, as a mermaid, all kinds of different things. I've been in feature films, like, it's so funny. The one I always laugh about is the film no one knows about because of the Kevin Spacey conspiracies that broke out. But it's like the film that no one ever heard about. But I was so excited because I was in this feature film in the pool, in a tail, and it featured, you know, my favorite movie of all time is The Princess Bride.
Right.
And in this movie that I was in, which is called, gosh, what was it even called now? I can't remember. We were filming the night David Bowie died in Hollywood. And no one on set, like all the extras didn't know. They were in their like 20s. I'm like, oh my God, David Bowie died. And they're all like, who? I was like, no, I'm old. And anyway, I digress. But yeah, Billionaire Boys Club. That's what it was called. Billionaire Boys Club. And so I was in this movie and I was so excited because the guy who played Wesley in The Princess Bride was in that movie. And I thought, okay, I can now leave this earth because I've been in a movie with Wesley from The Princess Bride. But then no one ever saw the movie, so it didn't matter anyway. But oh, did you?
Film. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
That was
so funny. Yeah. So anyway, I've done a bunch of underwater stunts and music videos and films and commercials. And Hannah and I did a really fun little commercial for Herbal Essences a while ago. We were the stunt doubles for the, you know, the models who were like these mermaids in the topside. Then we were the ones who were in the actual water doing the things. And we've had some fun little adventures.
So are there productions that you're on where you're not a mermaid? Do you do stunt work and double work where you're just a person with legs?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yep. I've worn all kinds of weird outfits and wigs and stuff where I am doubles. I'm a stunt double. So nobody knows it's me.
Do you like that fine. Work?
I do. I do. I really enjoy it because for me, it's easy and it really helps someone who doesn't have that skill set still get whatever they need conveyed as a character across. So yeah. You know, I think that that's a neat thing to be able to offer that. So it relieves, you know, if there's an actor who really loves the role that they're playing, but they just are not a water person, but they have an underwater scene and they're terrified of the water. I'm just so happy that I get to help them express their, hopefully to the degree that they want, that experience on the screen underwater where they don't have to go through that terrifying thing for them that makes them uncomfortable. And it saves the crew time. It saves the director the stress of dealing with a freaked out talent. And I love being in the water. So it's great. I love it.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, we've kind of talked about the fun, fluffy side of stuff. Let's talk about the more uncomfortable side of being a mermaid, which is, you know, having to spend time in chlorinated water and maybe like lakes and swimming pools and all that sort of stuff. What are you doing in terms of protecting your body when you're in these sort of situations?
Oh, Brett, you know, there's a thing that I've said in the past, which I'm usually a very positive person and I believe in our words become our realities. But the truth is mermaiding is pain.
Yeah.
Mermaiding is great discomfort. It is generally, I mean, gosh, foot cramps, blisters, all kinds of, you're freezing cold, muscle spasms, eyes are stinging and burning, sinuses are burning when you flood your sinuses, you know, you're scraping yourself on rocks or sand, depending on if you're in the ocean. Even if you're in a swimming pool that has bad chemistry or is not heated for the length of time you need to be in the water, because, you know, we cool off fast in the water. It's 400 times denser than air, and boy, do you feel it when it's cold. It does. It's bone and tail chilling stuff. So yeah, that there is a lot of discomfort. I mean, I've done things that it was like torture, and you have to smile and look natural and make it look like you are just in complete heaven and your element for the camera when you truly are screaming on the inside.
I think that's the thing too, is that it is such a beautiful look, you know, like this beautiful tail, it looks so effortless, but the mechanics of what's happening inside that tail is not apparent. Like, I think we uneducated people look at it and think, whoa, that must be amazing, but knowing that your feet are rubbing against each other or rubbing against the fin. You've got to keep your toes pointed to get rid of your heels. And
you're surrounded by sharks.
Yeah.
Holding your breath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, without a mask, you can't see. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's nuts. I mean, really, really. One of the things that, you know, when people who are just observing it or the final product, people observing the final product from the outside, and sometimes I don't even realize because it's almost like I go into survival mode. It's like these endorphins kick in, this fight or flight response happens. And yet you're supposed to be remaining calm with your heart rate, you know, as calm as can be so you can hold your breath and stay underwater for as long as possible to get the shot or do the action or have the shark swim by in the frame or have the manta ray swoop around you or whatever it is. And working and communicating with your shooter, knowing your angles, looking at the light, understanding. And I think that a good model, of course, as you know, being on the behind the lens of many of these incredible shoots, my God, some of the stuff that you are producing, oh my gosh, oh, Brett,
you.
Like your underwater sets, like I dream of experiencing your pool because I'm sure that you have it heated properly and the balance is nice for the pH for the eyes and
you
have these sets and you get, oh yeah, I've heard all about you and your 5C star VIP experiences in your pool, but trust me, it's on my list of things to experience one day. But you know, when a model knows and understands and intuitively without you having to direct them, they know what to do.
Yes. Yeah.
They know to clear their hair out of their face. They know which angle the light is most flattering. They understand how to point their body, angle their body. They know to get the bubbles out of their nose. They know to have a slight parting of the lips so it doesn't look like you're a puffer fish and how to cork the back of their mouth so that the, you know, all of these things that, you know, people like Hannah and I, we do it intuitively because we've been doing it forever.
Yes.
And you don't really think about it until you work with someone who hasn't.
Oh, that sort of skill set is priceless on set, especially if you're working for a client. So if you're doing a client job and you have a budget and you have a time frame, and if you're suddenly working with talent who are very willing but don't necessarily have the experience, then you spend so much time correcting them and just teaching them how to do the things that people like you and Hannah do instinctively. And the oft times that I get to work with people like you, it is like we have an ESP because I'll be under the water and, you know, we can't communicate. There's no communication once we're shooting, but I'll be like, oh, if you can just move that. Oh, you did it. Oh, cool. Okay. Well, that's fine. And I can just concentrate on doing my job and not having to worry about yours.
Yes. And equally from the perspective of a model, I can tell when I'm working with a shooter who doesn't know what they're doing and doesn't have it together on their side, because I'll get very frustrated when I've cleared my nose, I've moved my hair, I'm in a pose, the buoyancy is perfect. There's a moment with an animal and I don't hear their shutter go off. And I'm like, yes, Dad, you weren't ready. You know, so it works both ways. And when you have a team working together, and we know you and I have both experienced this with different people that we worked with, where it's like, oh God, there's this dance, we're doing a dance. And I love it when a shooter, you know, it's not always possible in the open ocean, but in a pool setting, when everyone's working on breath hold and you come up and there's this dance, and there's also an empathy of the shooter with the model who has to go up to take a breath, or, you know, if you don't have a hookah there to take a breath off underwater and stay underwater, which is always great. That's wonderful too. But if you have that dance where you're going up and down and then you have the bubbles and you have this gorgeous flow of up and down and up and down, and you can just capture so many beautiful things with the right team, the right lighting, the right temperature of water, the right pH balance, if you have control over that. And it's even more magical when that can happen in the sea.
Yes. So what sort of projects have you done in the sea? Because I've seen footage and images of you swimming with some very large animals.
Yeah.
Talk about those for me.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I've just done so many things. And again, many of those things aren't even planned. They happen spontaneously because I pretty much bring a tail everywhere. You know, just in case there's something that comes up or there happens to be an opportunity. And some of my most magical content and experiences and images and video have come from, really, as I like to say, the sea stars aligning. And, you know, like I'll go to a beautiful place, you know, like I go to the Bahamas or I go to Palau or I go to Mexico. And of course, I'm in a place where we might see animals, we might see certain things, and the timing could work out. But oh, wow. Gosh, I mean, a lot of it is just, oh, wow, here's an opportunity. Let's go do this. Can you do this? Yes, I can too. Oh my gosh, cool. And people always want to film mermaids. That's never an issue. No one's ever been like, I'm sorry. I just, this mermaid thing. No, I don't want to photograph that. Everyone wants this for their portfolio. So it's always really fun and easy. And I mean, I have dived with whale sharks. I have dived with manta rays. I've dived with a variety of different types of sharks and gosh, just swimming over coral reefs, jellyfish lake in Palau was amazing. Unexpected things come up. Like I work with a lot of wish foundations. This is another favorite thing of mine is doing Make-A-Wish for terminally ill children or they have a terminal or just a life-threatening illness. And oh my gosh, I swam out of Loch Lomond in Scotland to surprise a little girl. The water was 47 degrees. It was painful. But you know what? I forgot how uncomfortable I was because that little girl was so happy.
That's awesome.
So this career has taken me into emotional places, geographic spaces, subaquatic experiences, interactions with animals and people that I never could have dreamed upon the inception of realizing that day when I put on Mandy Ray's monofin in Cayman would occur in my future and continues to unfold. Like it continues to unfold, you know, sitting in the bedroom of some like famous celebrity who shall not be named because I signed an NDA and I'm sitting in their bedroom waiting to be carried out by their bodyguard into their swimming pool for a private event. Right. Like the weird things that have come up and the skill sets too, the understanding of how to move in the water, free diving, special effects work, product and like development and testing, marketing, Instagramming, image creating, editing videos, creating edutainment for children, doing Make-A-Wishes. Like who ever could have dreamed? Not me.
I know. I mean, you've done such a, you know, you're Mermaid Linden, but you're so much more than that. You know, you've created this whole industry around yourself, which I think is amazing. Like you've really kind of pushed the envelope and it's inspiring.
It was an accident, Brett.
Accidents are the best things. Most of my career is an accident as well. So I love the accidents. That's when the universe is kind of making things happen for you.
Yeah, I agree. It's been so much fun.
Lyndon, this has been amazing just to hear your story and just to learn all this stuff that I never even knew about you. This has been edutainment.
Hooray! My goal has been achieved. I'm so honored to be on here with you. I mean, Brett, this is truly an honor. I really look forward to the day when we get to work together.
I do too. And I've been wanting to work with you for quite a while, just getting those stars to align and then the right project to come along would be amazing.
Well, let's make it happen.
Sounds good. Thanks, Lyndon.
Thank you, Brett.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And as always, if you like the podcast, please subscribe, review, and share. If you'd like to support the production of these episodes, you can purchase our very cool merchandise at theunderwaterpodcast.com. We've got branded coffee mugs, stickers, beer cozies, and posters featuring our amazing illustration and logo by Joe Hodenow. If you'd like to connect with us or learn more about our guests, you can reach us at theunderwaterpodcast.com or on Instagram. We also have a Facebook group where you can discuss the episodes and even get your questions answered by the guests. There's a link to it in the show notes. You can learn more about land and water photography workshops and mentoring at brettstanley.com or Brett S. Photo on Instagram. The Underwater Podcast is presented and produced by me, Brett Stanley, and our music is Neo by Oh Boy. Keep creating, everyone. I'll see you in the water.